It is about a minute past three as the trip to Twin Cities continues. The Soviet president now in the governor's residence having lunch, after which they'll take a brief motorcade tour of the Twin Cities, heading on down towards downtown Minneapolis in the meeting with business leaders. Minnesota Public Radio reporter Stephen Smith has been covering the motorcade for the pool of reporters, and Stephen is now released from his pool duties for the moment and is with us by cellular telephone. Stephen, what's going on?
Well, Robert, as you know, President Gorbachev is in the governor's mansion. I'm standing just outside in the middle of the street. And just a few moments ago, I spoke with Senator Rudy Boschwitz, who, as you know, flew with President Gorbachev out here from Washington. And he said that it's his understanding that the visit to the farm is now out because the Soviet delegation is simply too tired to make the trip.
Really?
He said that President Gorbachev... Boschwitz said President Gorbachev was up until about, met with President Bush until about 8 o'clock yesterday evening, and then was up until about 1 o'clock with other kinds of meetings, and that they're simply too fatigued to make the entire trip. It's not clear how that rearranges the rest of the schedule. Perhaps they'll spend more time resting at the hotel in Minneapolis. But in any event, it looks now that the farm portion of this visit, according to Boschwitz, is out.
Now, tell me what you were doing in the pool there as Gorbachev was getting out and making his little forays into the crowds.
Running like a maniac. I was about car 34 in the motorcade. He is car 13. And when he hops out, what happens is we get word by radio that he's going to hop out and talk to people and that we're cleared to go and do that. As you know, the security is very tight, and we've been warned that if we go places we're not supposed to, we'll be shot and stuff like that. And anyway, when he jumped out, the radio message never really came back. We just sort of took it on faith, hopped out of the car, ran probably a block and a half, and then I have this long fishpole-like device on which I've got a microphone attached. And what I tried to do was lift that up over the crowd and get in close enough to get some remarks between Gorbachev and members of the crowd. That was pretty difficult to do because, among other things, this being a Soviet trip and the whole thing being planned and organized by the Soviets, the Soviet press is a few cars ahead of us. So they got there first, and it was hard to get over the inner ring. Not only that, every time I kind of launched my fishpole out over Gorbachev and his crowd, a KGB agent would keep pushing it out of the way. I did manage to hear him talking to a few different people. He was speaking in Russian. The Americans, of course, were speaking in English. I spoke with one young man from the northern suburbs who said he felt great. It was wonderful for him to meet the leader of the Soviet Union. He had an adrenaline high as a result. He said he told Gorbachev that he was looking good. He said he told the president he was looking good, and he claims the president responded, "All right," although I think that's somewhat doubtful.
Any idea, Stephen, if these visits are pretty well planned in advance, or does Gorbachev simply say to his driver, "Okay, I'm going to get out here"?
A little of both. I think... they are very well planned, and the KGB, as you know, is quite concerned about security. But this is one of, this is real life for them. Gorbachev has a habit of doing this. It's one of the things that endears him to both the public and gets him good media, this idea that he's spontaneous. He loves to just hop out of his car unencumbered and meet the people. Of course, when you say he hops out of his car and meets the people, he's got a half dozen to a dozen KGB and Secret Service agents around him. He's got the core of press people trying to poke their cameras out over the heads of folks and the microphones in there. And the meetings are pretty quick. But it makes for good pictures, and it makes, I think, probably for quite a few headaches for the Soviet security.
All right, Stephen, thanks. We'll be checking back with you as the opportunity warrants.
Okay, Bob.
Stephen Smith, who is reporting live as part of the motorcade press pool at the governor's residence right now, where the Soviet leader is having lunch along with the other dignitaries. 5 minutes past 3 o'clock. Once they finish up with lunch, they're going to take a little motorcade tour from the Summit Avenue area down around John Ireland Boulevard and up to the state capitol. You hear a little sound there from the state capitol coming in under that pool fee, and Gary Eichten is with us on his cellular telephone. It sounds like things are picking up a little bit there, Gary.
Well, a little bit, Bob. There are substantially more people here now than there were the last time that we chatted, although, frankly, I'm amazed at how few people are here. Most of the Constitution Avenue part of the route and a fair amount of John Ireland Boulevard are flanked by people now, cordoned off streets, of course. But for the most part, we're talking maybe one or two deep. Occasionally, there are little knots of people, five or ten deep. But really, surprisingly few people here.
Nothing like the turnout there was for the Twins when they won the World Series.
Oh, heavens no. That was wall-to-wall people. And you couldn't, you were hard-pressed to find any green space or any open asphalt, for that matter. And I think, as I recall, there were like 250,000 people up here, 200,000 or whatever. Here, there's plenty of open space. And although I couldn't guarantee, if somebody came out right now, I couldn't guarantee a front row position, you could get awfully close.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
You were saying earlier, Gary, that it appeared that a lot of the people who were there were protesting or in some ways trying to show their dissatisfaction with Gorbachev. Is it still pretty much those folks, or has it...
I think it's balanced off.
Balanced
I'm sure
off
there
now.
Are probably more people here now just to see Gorbachev than to send him a message. Although, again, it would be incorrect to describe this as a small group of protesters in relation to the rest of the crowd. Maybe a small group of protesters, but then the crowd isn't very big.
Pretty small crowd, too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating, and I would be interested to find out why. Obviously, the weather has played a part. There's no question about that. The weather was just horrid earlier. It's better now. It stopped raining, and it's not quite as windy. But you wonder how much interest there really is in this event.
Well, you do, Gary, and I thank you very much for checking in with us. We'll get back to you in a little bit. Gary Acton reporting live from the state capitol area where the Gorbachev motorcade will be driving by in the course, certainly, I would guess, in the next half hour or so. As for the current conditions in the Twin Cities, light rain at the airport, officially 49 degrees the temperature. The wind is from the north at 21, gusting to 28 miles an hour. So the winds are dropping down a little bit in velocity, but it's still what you'd have to call a fairly raw, blustery day out there. Let's check in with Chris Tetlin briefly, who is at downtown Minneapolis in the general area of the Radisson Plaza. Chris?
Yes, Bob, I'm in the Harvest House cafeteria, just upstairs from Woolworths, half a block down from the Radisson Hotel, where the business leaders will be meeting with President Gorbachev in a while. Folks are having a little lunch here, no breaded walleye that I can see. It's mostly coconut cream pie and coffee. This is the only window seat inside with a view of the Radisson that I can find. People have been scrambling around down here trying to find a place to be inside, out of the rain, out of the wind, and still be able to see what's going on here in an hour or so. But the police have effectively cordoned off the whole block, cut off all the skyways. Nobody can get into the skyways that are in the area. But here at the Harvest House, every window seat is taken.
All right, very good. Thank you. Chris Tetlin reporting live from downtown Minneapolis. At the business meeting, President Gorbachev will be meeting with the heads of a number of major American companies. Originally, that was seen as an opportunity for him to meet with Minnesota business leaders and Minnesota agribusiness leaders. Apparently, at the insistence of the Soviets, the scope of the meeting was expanded to include the heads of other major American companies, and we know that one of the people that's been invited to attend is Roger Smith, the outgoing chairman of General Motors. A number of other major industry leaders are there, going to be there, too. Patty Dale and Evelyn David Heiser are with us in the studios. Evelyn is from the University of Minnesota, Patty from St. Olaf College. Both are political scientists who specialize in the Soviet Union. Do you think, Evelyn, that Gorbachev is trying to turn his country into a capitalist society?
No. Do you want some elaboration?
Yes, please.
because that's a pretty unequivocal no. There are many different models of economic systems from which Gorbachev can choose. Not to say that Gorbachev or more likely his policy advisors will take another economic system wholesale and plop it on top of the existing Soviet economy, but they're looking at European systems from which they can take different elements of the economy. Certainly, marketization has become an important keyword for Soviet economic reform, trying to get prices to reflect supply and demand in a way that they just haven't in the past in the Soviet Union. And that's why Western commentators like to say, they're moving to capitalism.
Right.
That's very, introducing market forces as a means of pricing goods is very different than introducing private property. The Soviets are much more tentative on that. And if you think about the ideology, it's the private property, it's the arrangement of the means of production, if you will, that really matters.
But doesn't one really follow from the other? I mean, how much can you have market forces determining the prices of goods without, before long, you have to have private ownership of the means to produce those goods?
There are different forms of private ownership. Well, first of all, you can maintain state ownership in certain sectors of the economy. Certainly, many of the Western European countries have done that. Some of the heavy industries, infrastructure, and so forth, you can maintain state ownership in those areas. You can promote cooperatives, as Gorbachev has done in the consumer goods and consumer services industries, where rather than the workers being paid wages, like being paid by the hour, by the piece, there are profit-sharing arrangements that get away from the sort of exploitation that's associated with capitalism that the Soviets want to and have to stay away from for ideological reasons, so that you can introduce market forces as far as price setting is concerned, but you can avoid things like wage labor.
Patty Dale, what do you see him doing there?
To some extent, I disagree with Evelyn. In his speech, after assuming the new presidency, Gorbachev talked about the introduction of a capital market. And to the extent that capital will be traded, then I think we can talk about the introduction of capitalism to the Soviet Union. But that is not to say that it will dominate the whole of the economy. Also, it is not to say that Soviet capitalism will be like, let us say, American capitalism. Capitalism can exist in a number of different political frameworks. And what we may see, I think, is the growth of state capitalism, where the political elite sells what is now public property to itself and becomes a property-holding bureaucratic class. So I think we are seeing the beginnings of Soviet capitalism, but that is not to say that the Soviet economy is going to become like the American economy.
Commentator Patty Dale, along with Evelyn Davidheiser, here to make some observations about the situation in the Soviet Union as our live broadcast of President Gorbachev's trip to the Twin Cities continues. 14 minutes now past 3 o'clock. I should think it won't be too terribly long before they wrap up their lunch and begin the motorcade tour down Summit Avenue. The official word is now I have it, that the trip to the farm has indeed been canceled. The trip to the farm is off. And Stephen Smith told us that earlier by way of Senator Rudy Boschwitz. Apparently the Soviet delegation just too plain pooped out to go down and traipse around in the mud on that farm down there. Been a rather cold day. They're probably not dressed for it, and they just as soon get on their way and get some rest, I suspect. Well, Minnesota Governor Rudy Perpich is certainly having the last laugh. At least he is today. The governor's invitation to President Gorbachev to visit Minnesota was met with laughter from the governor's political opponents some months ago. But Gorbachev is here, and the conventional political wisdom is that Rudy Perpich is the main beneficiary. But political operative D.J. Leary says it's a little too early to make a clear judgment. I talked with D.J. and his colleague Y. Spano about the political impact in Minnesota of the Gorbachev visit.
5 days from now, there'll be the state DFL convention, and that'll be the first measurement. Most of us had observed when former Commissioner of Commerce Mike Hatch got into the election fray against the incumbent of his own party earlier this year, there was one thing that seemed for certain, and that was that the endorsement of that party was kind of going to be a slam dunk for Hatch. Because he had been the party chair, he'd kept all those mailing lists, and he'd really worked hard and toiled in the vineyard of the DFL rank and file. And the people who go to conventions, the chairs of the various counties, and it was from that group a lot of the support for his candidacy came. So that looked like it was going to be kind of an easy shot, and that even Perpich would be smart not to even contest for it. Well, Perpich announced somewhat into his reelection campaign that he was going to contest for the endorsement. A bit of a surprise. He made that announcement first, and then a couple days later, his campaign manager had to resign because he was so busy with his own private legal work. So he picked up campaign manager John Stanek, who's very, very capable, about a month before the DFL caucuses, which is the start of the endorsement process. And ever since then, Perpich has been doing surprisingly well. But I must say that's in contrast to what is perceived to be Hatch not doing quite as well as we'd expected. And let's face the facts on that, that Mike Hatch is a victim of expectations unfulfilled. I mean, it's nothing he's done wrong or anything in that regard. It's just wackos like me that sit around and try and put their finger in the air and say, that's funny, it's not coming the way I thought it was, so therefore the rule's a little crazy. But I think when you look at it in that perspective, then we know that we have a measurement tool later this month, and that's the clearly the DFL convention to see what the Gorbachev visit has done.
Well, the timing couldn't have worked out better for Rudy Perpich, really coming just 1 week before that convention.
The timing really is exquisite for Democrats, period, because you look that, you take today, June 3rd, and 5 days hence will be the DFL state convention. Now, that's very, very good for Perpich because he's got a contest there with somebody of his own party. And it changes a lot of his image and the idea that he was old, tired, worn out, been governor longer than anybody in the history of the state. But then right behind it, again for Democrats, June 12th is the scheduled start of the hearings for Senator Durenberger's problems. And then just behind that, by about 3 days, I believe, the IR state convention. And if you're an independent Republican and trying to vie for good headlines for your candidates for governor, that or at least two of them that are going to be in that convention contest, and you're fighting for headlines with one of your senior statesmen in terms of your United States senator, it's a bit of a problem. So it's been good timing for Democrats all the way around these first couple of weeks of June.
I'll be interested to see how the national media portray Rudy Perpich and the state of Minnesota. Newsweek, of course, came up with the much-quoted Governor Goofy phrase. What's your expectation on how we'll fare in the national press?
Well, I've been talking to an awful lot of them, both the national press and the international press. I have a lot of old friends who flatter me by still calling me, you understand. And everything, you're exactly right, everything is counterpositioned against the Governor Goofy article that Newsweek did earlier this year. And I have this feeling, as I've traveled about the state since the Gorbachev visit was announced, that that has helped Perpich because it gave it shifted everything that was a debit, as it were, against him over to the credit column, where they said an outsider might have thought this is goofy and list one, two, three, four things. Clearly, let's recall that his announcing he was inviting the Soviet president Mikhail Gorbachev to visit him in Minnesota when he came for the summit, ha, 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 they were falling in the street laughing. You know?
Uh-huh.
And to say that at that time that Perpich was doing badly in the polls and the public opinion is an understatement, something akin to saying Mozart wrote a good tune or two. You know, I mean, this he was in deep, deep trouble and getting deeper and getting worse.
Yeah.
So I think that when they mix it all in, that now he looks like somebody with some vision, you understand. He's back to that idea that that he brought back to Minnesota in the 82 campaign, that the future economic development of the state really lies in international trade, and he's been able to attract a visit from one of the foremost figures of the late 20th century.
Let's bring Y. Spano in here. He is DJ's co-editor with Politics in Minnesota, a newsletter that's very widely read by people in the political know here in Minnesota. Wyman, do you think that there's really much interest in the public's part of a world leader coming to Minnesota, and is that going to have much of an impact on Rudy Perpich?
I haven't seen any like polling data. I just, you know, just people. I've been so stunned at how many people I run into. Remember when we were talking about having Gorbachev, like, give a big address?
Yeah.
So many people saying, boy, I'm going to take my kid to that. I want to see that. And people talking about going out to the airport and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, there's a real, I'm impressed. I'm surprised.
Does Perpich benefit tremendously from that, or don't the people necessarily attach that much of it to him?
You bet he does. I just can't see how this doesn't help a lot. You know, you're playing on a whole different stage. I mean, to me, the only thing that can happen now that hurts Perpich is if something terrible happens, if the summit breaks up and he goes home, you know, and doesn't finish the trip or absent that kind of stuff, I just don't see how Rudy Perpich doesn't look like there he is, you know, with a world leader being gubernatorial. I can't see how it doesn't help him.
It meant a lot, Bob, don't forget, to every past administration that wanted to stay in office, whether it was Lyndon Johnson or Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan, and certainly George Bush, to try and get a meeting in with the Soviet leader, whoever it happened to be at the particular time. Most recently, it's been Gorbachev. And if it was important enough to them and they could arrange it, they did it. Now, the same thing, I think, whatever benefit politically they felt inured to that advantage, to their advantage of that, just falls off on Perpich to a certain degree in Minnesota politics.
Well, here's Rudy Perpich talking with the most charismatic world leader of the day, Mikhail Gorbachev. Do you think that this revives Rudy Perpich's own interest in running for higher office like the presidency?
It'll help him politically enormously if he doesn't mention it.
That's right. This is not the time to start in on that one.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to, when you phrased that question, I thought you were going to ask whether or not some of the charisma would rub off on Rudy Perpich.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I don't know that you can teach that old dog all those new tricks. He seems to survive anyway, so I think we've finally figured out that he doesn't need all that much charisma, and he doesn't need to be the world's greatest orator. Somehow he seems to hang in with us anyway.
Y. Spano, along with D.J. Leary, longtime political observers and operatives in Minnesota, they publish a newsletter called Politics in Minnesota. 23 minutes past 3 o'clock. This is Minnesota Public Radio's live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities. We have cleared out our schedule for the entire afternoon and early evening so we can bring you this live, continuous coverage. The visit to the farm has definitely been canceled. That is the word that we are seeing on our wire service reports. It's the word we got from Stephen Smith a little while ago via Senator Boschwitz that the Gorbachev party has decided to cancel the visit to the Brand Farm in Farmington, Minnesota. So that really leaves, after the luncheon concludes at the mansion, the motorcade tour down Summit Avenue and around the Capitol Complex area, down Interstate 94 to the Radisson Plaza Hotel in downtown Minneapolis and a meeting with business leaders. Then presumably still on the schedule is the visit to Control Data headquarters in Bloomington. Just the farm visit, so far as we understand at this point, has been dropped from the schedule. Our commentators, Patty Dale and Evelyn Davidheiser, are with us here in the studios. Gary Eichten at the Capitol was mentioning that there really aren't that many people coming out to see Gorbachev. Does that surprise you, Patty? I mean, the weather certainly is a factor, but it doesn't seem like it's been the big draw that everybody was expecting it to be.
I think there was a similar occurrence in Washington, D.C., and perhaps this is an indicator of how Gorbachev has become part of the furniture, that his visit is not that big a deal. He is an accepted and familiar political leader now.
Well, I can kind of see that in Washington because they're used to heads of state coming in there just about as often as you and I turn down our shirt collar. But this is Minnesota, and there hasn't been a Soviet leader come to the hinterlands since 31 years ago, Nikita Khrushchev in 1959 in Iowa.
But the world is more technologically open.
And we can see Gorbachev on the tube in our home practically every night, can't we?
Yes.
On the news. Yes. Yeah. Evelyn, what do you think?
There's also a big difference in American opinions of the Soviet Union between in 1990 as compared to 1959. If we think of, I mean, this may be evidence of Gorbachev's success in opening the Soviet Union to the Western world. the average American doesn't see the Soviet Union as the evil empire anymore. It's not such a curious thing to see a Soviet leader. It's in the 1950s, to see a communist was to see another animal.
The devil incarnate, practically.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not that way. Yeah. We have an image of Gorbachev as someone who maybe isn't even a communist. Maybe he just has that title. So you can't go out and see the devil incarnate on this Sunday.
Do you think that the Minnesota media have gone overboard in this whole thing? Well, somebody said that there would, I don't know, before this event happened, they said this would have about as much substance, or less substance, actually, than the Twins winning the World Series.
Well, apparently the population thinks that the media has gone overboard, and they're tired of it already, I suppose. The crowds would seem to suggest that, although, again, the weather is probably a factor. I think the point that was made earlier, the style of Gorbachev's visit is not exactly conducive to drawing crowds. If he had decided to give a major address, it would be something to take the children to.
Right.
The best one can hope for is to see his motorcade pass along, and if you're really lucky, you'll happen to be at the point where the motorcade stops. But where that is, no one knows. So why go stand in the rain?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is a business visit. He has come to tell the businessmen of Minnesota that it is worthwhile for them to further explore the possibilities of doing business in the Soviet Union. He will acknowledge that there are some difficulties. This visit, and I, you know, my time is limited. I have business to do, and then I must move on. That is the tone of this visit.
And he is a fairly tough business negotiator too, isn't he, Evelyn?
That's correct. And it also points to the constituency that he's interested in on this trip. In past trips, focus has been on arms control issues, the kinds of issues that it really helps to stir sort of general public sympathy for the Soviet Union, the Soviet leader, those kinds of things. What he wants to accomplish on this trip is to improve economic ties, work on the issue of most favored nation status, develop a constituency in the United States that's going to push for those kinds of ties, and that's something that he can get from the business community, but not too likely from the general public. So,
Evelyn David Heiser and Patty Dale are commentators. They are both political scientists. She is with the University of Minnesota, and Patty is with St. Olaf College in Northfield. 29 minutes past 3 o'clock, our live broadcast of President Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities is made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla Spear Beardsley. Let's go down to the Radisson Plaza Hotel now, President Gorbachev will be heading after the motorcade tour of the Twin Cities ends, where he will be heading for a meeting with business leaders from around the nation and around the Midwest. Lauren Amoto is standing by down at the Radisson. Hello, Lauren.
Hi, Bob.
How's it going down there?
Well, we're just all sort of getting set up down here. We've got one of those small armies of press people down here, as you probably have seen and heard so much about today.
Mm-hmm.
And being down on 7th Street here, we're sort of experiencing that Minneapolis wind tunnel effect today with the winds whistling down under the skyways and doing their best to blow all the equipment around and everything.
Well, I think that you'll find that wind tunnel effect almost anywhere, Lauren, because the last I saw on the weather wire, it was gusting up to 28 miles an hour out of the north, so it's not a very chipper day out there.
No, and it's worse down here on the street, believe me.
Have you seen any evidence of any of the bigwig business leaders showing up yet?
We haven't seen any movement yet on the street here, Bob. All the streets in downtown Minneapolis are pretty much cordoned off. They brought us over here on a bus from the Metrodome, of course, and as we came through downtown, went up and came across on 7th Street, we could see that for several blocks in either direction from the bus, the streets were blocked off, no traffic at all on the cross streets, no traffic running parallel to us either. So basically, it's going to be a straight shot as soon as the business leaders do start to arrive, but at this point, still people still trying to put up some banners around the front of the Radisson, making things look presentable for those big shots when they do show up.
Is it your understanding, Lauren, that the business meeting is still going to be open to broadcast coverage?
Latest word we had, Bob, over at the press office at the Metrodome was that, yes, the meeting would not only be open, but in fact there would be sound from that meeting available on what's called the pool feed, the common feed to the media, and that we'd be able to hear everything that transpires there. And then apparently afterward, also some of the business leaders are planning to meet with reporters, I won't say individually, but certainly in a smaller group, so that there might be a chance to kind of debrief them about their impressions of Gorbachev and how the meeting went.
Well, terrific, Lauren. We'll be checking back with you as the afternoon continues and as we get closer to the scheduled time of that business meeting. The official schedule now looks this way, that at 4:15, the Gorbachev party will be going to the Radisson. They'll be leaving the Radisson at around 7 o'clock for a trip to the Control Data Headquarters in Bloomington. And whether there'll be a period for a little rest down there at the Radisson or whether the business meeting is going to be a little bit longer than we expected is a little unclear at this point. I suspect it'll just be a little rest time. And then the plan is to leave for the airport just around, just a little before 8 o'clock. The visit to the farm having been canceled. Word on that coming about a half an hour ago. Gary Eichten is standing by up at the state capitol on the cellular phone, and we'll check in with him now. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Bob. Actually, the crowd is starting to pick up. These people are smarter than I am, Bob. You know, they didn't get out here until just the nick of time.
Yeah.
Actually, the crowd is starting to pick up pretty good. And, of course, we're getting close to the time for the motorcade. So rather than standing out here like fools in the rain when it was cold, they just waited until it was time and then headed on over. So the crowd is building pretty good.
And does it appear that it's mostly sightseers and not so many protesters?
Well, there's still a lot of people here sending a message.
Mm-hmm.
Sending a message. In fact, the thing that struck me is kind of interesting, and I don't know that this means anything, but take it for what it's worth. There are a lot of flags here, especially Latvian and especially Latvian flags. And then we have Estonian flags, and I think that's a Russian flag down the road. They're not absolutely certain of that. Only one American flag so far, but it's right in front of the Capitol, interestingly enough, where, according to the unofficial lottery that's underway, if Mr. Gorbachev stops, it's assumed that he's going to stop right in front of the Capitol, and that's been the most popular spot to stand.
What sort of unofficial lottery are you talking about there, Gary?
Well, Bob, we can't talk about that on the air.
I see. All right. As far as the crowd, are there many families with little kids there? Show the little ones a glimpse of Gorbachev.
There are some. There are some. And, well, actually, they're a fair number, but it's so cold, Bob. And I think a lot of people really did stay away because of the weather. I'm becoming more and more convinced of that because there does seem to be some genuine enthusiasm starting to build here now as we get closer to the actual time when he's going to drive by.
Okay, very good. Well, Chris Roberts was suggesting to us earlier in the day that the festivities for Grand Old Day, which usually was expected to draw about 200,000 people, appeared to be down considerably because of the weather, too. So I suspect that that you're absolutely right about that. Well, thanks, Gary. We'll check back with you as it looks like the motorcade is going to begin to depart there.
All right, Bob.
25 minutes now before 4 o'clock. One of the people who has covered the Soviet Union for many, many years was Moscow bureau chief for the New York Times for a number of years and has won just about every award that the journalism profession can confer on an individual. Is Mr. Harrison Salisbury, a native of Minneapolis, a graduate of the University of Minnesota, and he is on the line with me now from his home in Connecticut. Mr. Salisbury, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's good to be with you. I wish I was out there.
Well, I'll tell you this much. It's bitter cold out here. It's about 48 degrees with a brisk wind, so you'd need to wear your heavy clothes, that's for sure.
It gives Mr. Gorbachev a sense of what he's going back to in Russia.
I think that's probably true, right. I want to ask you, Mr. Salisbury, if you, by any chance, and this is really just a shot-in-the-dark question, if you, by any chance, were involved in covering Nikita Khrushchev's trip to Iowa when he was here 31 years ago.
I couldn't have been more involved. I was with him every step of the way. I was with him on that famous day at Roswell Garst's farm when Garst was showing him how he grew corn and how he processed it, and indeed, I was right at Garst's side and Khrushchev's side when Garst began throwing corn cobs at photographers who were getting in the way of Khrushchev's look at his his corn loading operation. He was doing it with some bulldozers and loaders, and the photographers were so excited they Khrushchev couldn't get a good look. Garst started throwing these corn cobs at him, and then he started making a swirling kick to get them out of the way, and said, if you fellas don't get out of the way, I'll kick you out of the way. And he let forth this great kick and got me in the shin. He finished up the sentence in great surprise. He said, even if your name is Harrison Salisbury. Big moment.
Yeah, right. What sort of a person was Khrushchev, and particularly in comparison to Gorbachev?
Well, he was very much out front. He was what I would call a populist politician. People in Iowa, and I think people in Minnesota also, would have said that had he been running on the farmer labor ticket, he probably would have swept the field. He was very down to earth and full of homegrown gestures and things of that kind. This got him into a lot of trouble, such as when he took his shoe off in the United Nations,
yeah,
and banging on the table. But he was a popular guy. He won friends because people sensed that he was earthy, and he was really very interested in farming and all that sort of thing. Had great curiosity as to how people lived and worked and all that. Gorbachev is much more laid back. He's a much more sophisticated man. Khrushchev had no college education. Gorbachev has. Khrushchev really was a self-made man, a self-made politician. He'd come up really from the very depths in just down on the border of the Ukraine. Gorbachev has had all the advantages of a different era, and while he has many of the same objectives, both men wanted to get Russia going again. Gorbachev does it with modern technology and modern slick techniques that Khrushchev wouldn't have known how to handle.
Well, Khrushchev appears to have had a much tighter grip on the country than Gorbachev does, at least at the moment. Is that true?
I think that's probably true, and it is because he came immediately after Stalin. You see, when things were in such a state of terror and turmoil, and he came in as the guy who was going to fix the machine, and he won enormous support because he was such a relief after what they'd had. But he really shocked the people when he made that famous speech against Stalin, the secret speech exposing all the crimes and things that had been going on, and I have to say that many people in Russia didn't think he should have talked so frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I personally thought that he did exactly the right thing, but he stepped on the toes of a great many of his bureaucrats, his military people, his fellow politicians, and he had plenty of political trouble. He didn't manage his affairs very tightly. On the other hand, Gorbachev has got plenty of political trouble, too.
What led to Khrushchev's downfall?
I think basically his cut in the armed forces. He cut about 1 million men out of the army, including about, I don't know, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 generals. And they didn't like losing their perks and things of that kind. And they got together with some of the politicians, Brezhnev in particular, who didn't like his campaign against the bureaucrats. And they tossed him out.
How is Khrushchev remembered today?
He is remembered very fondly in Russia. They didn't like him too much while he was there. The intellectuals looked down on him. Now they think of him as a very benign force, a guy who did his best but couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the other thing that has changed so dramatically is basically while Khrushchev was a very active ingredient in the Cold War, Gorbachev seems to be a very active participant in ending the Cold War.
Well, this is true, but I also would have to say a word for Khrushchev, whom I knew damn well, that he was very eager to end the Cold War, and when he came back, when he came over to the United States and finally sat down with Eisenhower at Camp David, he thought that he did have the Cold War on the way out.
Really?
But unfortunately, Ike was supposed to go to Russia and have a big trip over there. And unfortunately, on the 1st of May of that year, which would have been about 1960, I guess, the U-2 was shot down over Moscow on May Day, and that blew the trip out, and it blew the end of the Cold War off for several years.
How close do you think the United States ever came to nuclear war with the Soviet Union?
Well, I think they came very close. I think that the most critical moment was undoubtedly the Cuban Missile Crisis, when it was touch and go. I think that before that, while there was a great deal of thunder and talk and all that, both sides showed a lot of responsibility, and actually they did in the missile crisis as well. But in those years, you were just living on the edge of the possibility of nuclear war, and that's now been pushed way, way back. First of all, through Reagan and Gorbachev, and now through Bush and Gorbachev.
I just one more question. I'll let you get back to your other activities there. I'd love to talk to you for an hour. It'd be so interesting. But do you think Gorbachev is going to survive?
I'm sorry to say I think that he is not. I think that in spite of all his accomplishments here at the summit, he goes back to face a very, very difficult political situation. I don't know how long he can do it. He's a masterly manipulator of the tightrope. He walks in peril all the time. And something which I don't think many people have noticed is that there are going to be one or two more summits this year. And I think that he hopes that by virtue of those that he may be able to get through this year and into next winter. But I was just in Moscow, and I confess I did not find a single person who thought that he would still be in office a year from now.
Harrison Salisbury, you have been out to Minnesota on a number of occasions on book tours. Do you have any other books in the works right now?
Well, I'm working on a big book about China, but I've got a lot of work to do on it yet. It won't be finished for nearly a year. I'll be out in Minnesota again, though. I like my native state a lot, and I enjoy visiting it.
Great. Well, I hope you'll have a chance to stop by Minnesota Public Radio. We'd love to put you on the air.
Okay.
Thanks a million.
Righto. Bye-bye.
Harrison Salisbury, longtime New York Times correspondent, author of many, many books on the Soviet Union and on China. He has covered just about every hotspot in the world during the course of his long journalistic career. It is 17 minutes before 4 o'clock. Our live coverage of President Gorbachev's trip to the Minneapolis-St. Paul area continues. We anticipate that we will be going to the motorcade out of the luncheon in just a few minutes. Mr. Dusko Doder is on the line with us now, I believe, from Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. He is the author of a biography on Mikhail Gorbachev. Mr. Doder, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tell me what your impressions are of Gorbachev, particularly coming out of this summit in Washington. Did he get what he needed to get?
I don't think he got what he wanted to get. I think he got a little bit, but not enough to show that he has been strong and successful on this trip.
What did he not get that he should have?
I think he should have gotten, he wanted to get MFN, and I think he wanted to get more in the way of something tangible economically. I think that the visit to Minnesota and San Francisco is going to be more successful from his point of view.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the disagreement over Germany, I gather they did not really resolve much of anything at all there. What do you think the scenario is for that?
Well, I think Mr. Gorbachev's situation is very difficult there. As you know, NATO does exist while Warsaw Pact has disintegrated. In fact, we have a problem of trying to find a mission for NATO, and I think that his references to the wartime trauma that the Russians still feel about Germany are valid, and I think President Bush has been sensitive to it, but the situation cannot be resolved that quickly, I think.
We were just hearing from Harrison Salisbury seconds ago, who said that on a trip to Moscow that he'd just returned from, he didn't find anybody who thought Gorbachev would still be in power a year from now. Do you concur with that?
Yes, I do. I think that, predicting, weatherman is wrong 50% of the time, of course, and then it's very hard to say. But it's very difficult to see how he can continue to play a magician and pull these rabbits out of the hat. The hat is really getting smaller and smaller, and the rabbits begin to look sicker and sicker.
Well, what follows Gorbachev, then? In terms of not necessarily, just, in terms of personalities of a leader, number one, and secondly, policies. Will they become a more repressive society? Will they reverse the course of perestroika? What do you think?
I think that you have emergence of a number of younger people who now attractive political figures, but I don't think that they do have a program of their own. I think Perestroika is dead. I think Gorbachev is a great figure because he liberated his own country and he liberated Eastern Europe. What I see as the most likely scenario is that you will have a sort of a hardline regime temporarily, a regime backed up by the armed forces.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Dusko Doder, who has written a biography on President Mikhail Gorbachev, speaking to us live on the telephone from Chicago. Interesting, while Mr. Doder was making the response that, yes, he doesn't think Gorbachev will be in power a year from now, both of our commentators, Patty Dale and Evelyn David Heiser, were shaking their heads no rather vehemently. I'd like to hear you explain why.
Well, I mean, you ask the right question. If no Gorbachev, then who, then what? It's not a question of Gorbachev being able to come through on his policies as much it is as a question of what or who can replace Gorbachev, I think. And I don't think that there's a politically viable force waiting in the wings able to replace Gorbachev. We hear a lot of talk about the military being discontent, the military waiting to oust Gorbachev and promote a conservative solution. The Soviet military simply has never been in that kind of political position. They have a strong interest in the success of Perestroika because they're not getting the kinds of high-tech toys that militaries like. So they're not, I mean, certainly they're generals who are, you know, upset that they were retired early or whatever. But the military as a whole isn't a significant threat to Gorbachev. The most difficult, well, he's got two difficult problems facing him, the economy and the nationalities. There isn't a viable solution on the economy. There's no one standing out there offering an alternative policy. Yeltsin's been harping on the slow speed of Perestroika, the lack of success of Perestroika, but not offering a policy alternative. He's been saying it's too slow, but I oppose the new market reforms that were discussed in the last couple weeks. He is not a viable solution. One might imagine a scenario where the Union breaks up into its various component republics, but there are very strong economic reasons why that's not really a viable solution either, and why a complete dissolution of the Union along nationalities lines isn't very likely either. So,
Patty, you see also Gorbachev continuing on?
Yes, I do. He is not dependent upon the support of his colleagues in the Politburo. He has a constitutionally guaranteed position. The Constitution provides for his removal only if the Supreme Court of the Soviet Union finds him guilty of violating his constitutional powers, and they are now very considerable. We might compare Gorbachev right now to the dictator in the Republic of Rome. That is to say, constitutionally guaranteed powers for a limited period and a limited purpose. And in 4 years, or in a little more than 4 years' time, Gorbachev has to come up for re-election. He has that period within which to do something about the economy. The possibility of his extra-constitutional removal by a coup d'etat, I think, is very limited. The military is divided. And yes, there are a lot of people grumbling, and there are a lot of people dissatisfied, but that need not turn into a revolutionary overthrow. And we also must remember there were a lot of people dissatisfied with the way things used to be. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of frustrated talent, a lot of young people, sick and tired of the ineptitude of the gerontocracy, of the governance by old people. So, yes, there is dissatisfaction, there is grumbling. Sometimes there's nothing in the shops. I do not see this translating into Gorbachev's removal.
Commentator Patty Dale from St. Olaf College in Northfield and Evelyn Davidheiser from the University of Minnesota, both are political scientists who specialize in the Soviet Union. Well, it's about 10 minutes before 4 o'clock. Where do things stand here? The Gorbachev folks are still, so far as we can tell, at the governor's mansion in St. Paul, finishing up their lunch. They will begin a motorcade tour of St. Paul down Summit Avenue around the Capitol Complex area, then down Interstate 94 to downtown Minneapolis, a meeting with business leaders at the Radisson Plaza Hotel. From there, they will be going to Control Data headquarters in Bloomington and then on to the Twin Cities International Airport for a departure to San Francisco at around 8 o'clock or so. The visit to the farm in Farmington, Minnesota, the Brand Farm, has been canceled. It is about 8 minutes now before 4 o'clock. Our live coverage of the Gorbachev visit continuing. I have on the telephone line with me now John Brand, who is a member of the Brand family in Farmington, who had been prepared to receive the Gorbachev party at their farm this afternoon. When did you find out, John, that the trip to the farm was canceled?
I was feeding cows a little early. We were going to milk a little early. I suppose it's been about a half hour now that I actually found out. I was actually in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was still kind of a iffy thing, but now it's for sure. They just started tearing everything down right now, the trailers and...
What did you hear about why they decided to cancel?
Sounded like he's pretty exhausted, and they wanted maybe more time at some of the other sites, I guess.
How do you feel about this?
Pretty disappointed.
Well, I would imagine.
We put a lot of work, and relatives that have drove as far as 12 hours, and... There's a lot of volunteer work that's come in here. We have a lot of people cleaning up right now, so it's quite a disappointment. But it looks like we can go up to the airport. So.
Oh, you're going to be able to go up to the airport at least?
It looks that way now.
Will you have a chance to meet him at least, or
They're thinking maybe we can, so at least see him. So.
Yeah. Well, that really is too bad because, like you say, everybody was all prepared for it.
We actually even went through the whole thing. It was every step of the way, so.
Mm-hmm.
The day was going to end out okay here. We probably could have been out at the picnic table towards the end with the milk and cheesecake and everything, so.
They're talking about it being kind of muddy for the walk around the outdoors. Was that a problem, or had you gotten that taken care of?
That wasn't a problem. I sure hope that getting our shoes a little dirty wasn't what stopped it, I hope. But, they had hay broke open, so... It wouldn't have been a problem. We had crushed rock. We had a lot of rock hauled in. And it actually dried up a little bit here.
Well, is this going to make you think twice the next time a bigwig comes through?
Oh, I don't think so. We'll go through it again. It was fun.
Good. Well,
still disappointed.
Yeah. John, thank you. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Okay. Thank you, sir, for calling.
Sorry it didn't work out. John Brand, a member of the family that President Gorbachev was scheduled to go and visit down in Farmington. But unfortunately, that is not to happen yet this afternoon. It is now about 5 minutes before 4 o'clock. As you know, one of the people who helped arrange the visit of President Gorbachev to Minnesota is Al Isley, a public relations consultant in Washington. Isley, along with Control Data Corporation founder William Norris and other Control Data Company executives, lay the groundwork for the visit. Isley works in Washington now, as I said. He's a native of Blue Earth in southern Minnesota and has worked for former Senator and Vice President Walter Mondale. When I talked with him yesterday, I asked him if Gorbachev would have canceled his trip if he hadn't gotten what he wanted out of the summit.
Well, he hasn't gotten the agreement to seek most favored trade status yet. He wanted that, but he did get a very good surprise bonus, which was the trade agreement that they signed. They still don't have the MFN status, but he probably will get that.
I think he would have come anyway. I think he really needs Minnesota as much more than Minnesota needs him. He needs to demonstrate to his own people that he has political popularity in the U.S., that he still has stature as a world leader in other countries, and he needs to demonstrate that he can enlist the help of the American business community to help improve the economy and, above all, to raise the living standards of the Soviet citizens.
Do you have any idea why it took so long for him to set the agenda?
Here, you mean,
yeah.
In Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think it's just the Soviet way of doing things. I think that they did not have time to focus on that because they were so concerned about the first part of the trip, which was the Washington summit portion of it. And again, I think that they wanted to... Gorbachev's very good at PR. I mean, I'm in the business, but he's much better than I am. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't do anything without calculated intent. And I think he wanted to have the best forums here and the best kind of agenda that he could use to deliver his message.
Why do you suppose there's so many non-Minnesota business leaders involved in that business meeting in the afternoon? Doesn't that kind of shift the focus away from Minnesota a little bit?
Well, I think that it does, but again, that's at the Soviets' request. They wanted, from the very first, they have made it clear that they wanted representation from not only Minnesota, but from the Midwest, the 10 or 12 surrounding states. I met with the number two man in the embassy about 2 weeks ago, and that was one of the first points he made, was that they want broader representation than just Minnesota.
Okay. What do you think the practical outcome of all this is going to be?
Well, I guess it's going to take a little while to see, but I think at the best there will be two things happen. One, there will be some real business deals done as a result of this, joint ventures and other sorts of business outcomes of business arrangements. Minnesota companies, I think, and Midwestern companies will actually do considerable more business with the Soviets in the coming months. The second thing, I think, which in many ways is as important or more important, will be a better understanding by the American people of what it is that the Soviet Union needs. And I think if we go back to former Vice President Humphrey, always talked about the importance of economic relations as being even more important than military competition. And I think we're going to see that there are enormous opportunities in the Soviet Union for not only American companies, but American individuals, retired farmers, for instance, who can give their expertise to Soviet farmers, retired teachers or young people, Peace Corps types. There are all kinds of good neighbor policies that I think will result from this.
Why is it important, in your view, for Gorbachev to come himself rather than just carrying on all these discussions at a different or lower level? I mean, does it really make any difference if Gorby sees a Minnesota cow?
Well, I think the answer is that it's a symbolism of the top man coming here. I mean, you wouldn't have the kinds of enthusiasm and interest here that you have if anybody other than Gorbachev came. He is, after all, the most exciting and interesting and perhaps charismatic politician on the world stage today. And it's an enormous compliment to Minnesota that he decided to come here. But as I said, it's the biggest thing to happen in Minnesota since the last glacier went through here about 10,000 years ago.
That's a little bit of hyperbole now, isn't it, really?
Well, I'm entitled to a little hyperbole.
I guess you probably are. We hear that the Soviets have fallen behind on some of their payments for recent grain sales and some joint ventures have been delayed getting off the ground. Does this bode ill, do you think, for American companies trying to get into business with the Soviets?
Well, I think it's an example. It demonstrates one of the most serious problems the Soviet have, which is that they do not have much hard currency. The ruble is not convertible. It's a very big problem for them. I have said many times that American companies that want to do business with the Soviets and in the Soviet Union should go into it with their eyes wide open and their hand in their wallet. It's a tough place to do business. The Soviets are tough negotiators, as the arms control people can tell you. There's a language barrier. It's an expensive place to do business. There's very little infrastructure there. Difficult to even get a fax or a telephone call there or from there. But by the same token, there are great opportunities there for companies that take a long-range approach and are willing to be patient. They're not going to make a profit tomorrow or next year. It's going to take them a while, but there is a very underdeveloped market there of 285 million consumers who are
who really need the most basic things that we take for granted.
But how do they pay for it if they don't have hard currency and they don't have a convertible currency? How do we get the money for it?
Well, what they have done up to now is a kind of a barter system where they trade us ships or vodka or furs or caviar or whatever goods that can be sold in the West for hard currency. I don't know. They're going to have to resolve that problem. That's one of their major problems is that of paying for these things. The Soviets do have, they're a huge country with enormous natural resources, natural oil, natural gas, oil, gold, all the kinds of things that can be sold on the world market. But getting it to the point where you can sell it and exchange it for hard currency is a problem.
Public relations consultant Al Eisley, who is credited with bringing Gorbachev to Minnesota, at least with extending the initial invitation to him. It is now 1 minute past 4 o'clock. This is member-supported Minnesota Public Radio. This is KNOW, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Light rain, 49 degrees in the Twin Cities at last report. The wind gusting to 28.